from Fort Lauderdale.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Clarkfeld with Stonewall Live, the best in movies, books, and LGBT stuff all over my Blog Talk radio station. Tonight we have Ruben Rosario, who has spent 20 years shredding and loving movies constantly. He's been employed by the Miami Herald, Sun Sentinel in 2010. He started working for the Miami Sun Post. He's now with the Miami art scene and Punch Drunk Movies, and has been a guest on WLRN. You've seen him, you've heard him. Here he is, Ruben. Say hello.
Hello, movie lovers out there. How are you doing tonight?
I'm sure they're all doing great. As you know, this Sunday is the high holy days, one of the high holy days of gay world. The Oscars, right?
Super Bowl one, the Tony's Super Bowl two.
That's right. Well, yeah, I think you're right. Okay. Ruben and I have had the best three or four weeks bouncing around with this this show. I have screened more movies in the last month than I have in my entire life. No, not my entire life, but since last time I've done the show. Ruben, what's your take on this year's Oscar?
It's a very strange year. It's a very in some cases, in some categories, it will be kind of predictable. In others, it's going to be, I'm still racking my brain, actually. On my drive down here, I was still kind of wondering what's going to win Best Picture. I still don't know. I mean, there are camps that are certain that Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri is winning. There's another camp that is equally confident that The Shape of Water is winning. I'm not so sure that they're winning. It's, to quote my friend, Variety critic Guy Lodge, my head says Three Billboards, but my gut is saying Get Out.
You said that earlier, that you had a epiphany, and Get Out was just popped into your head.
And I almost jumped out of my seat. I was driving north to Fort Lauderdale, and it's like my gut kind of screaming, Get Out is winning, Get Out is winning.
And that came from the full moon tonight?
Maybe that's it. Maybe the full moon helped to illuminate. The situation.
All right, since this is an LGBT show, we're going to start talking, of course, probably more than we should, about Call Me by Your Name.
Well, we should talk about Call Me by Your Name. It is the best film of 2017. So I'm really glad it's getting this recognition. I think it's a fantastic, sublime film with that's so beautifully textured and beautifully rendered. So I'm happy it's finding an audience. And it's also found its share of detractors, as you told me earlier.
Right.
What's that about?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got some, crazy gay friends who, they're not crazy. They're just opinionated. Is that a good word? They felt that since they wanted a gay film, should have gay actors, gay writers, gay whatever, and it just has to be 100% gay. And the other thing was that I heard that, why did they pan away during the sex scene? Why didn't we see, was it because they're two straight actors and they didn't want to be seen fucking? I mean, I can say that. I can say that here.
You can.
Yeah. But I'm just saying there were so many of the detractors. I mean, I don't know anyone that was just bleh about the movie. They either loved it and saw it three times, or they just absolutely hated it and were bored. So, I mean, it really brought out the best and worst in many of my friends. I'm not giving anybody's name. But, I saw it and was just, I couldn't get up out of my seat afterwards. I was glued to the seat, staring at, of course, the credits, because that has a whole other beautiful ending. And it did have a beautiful, sweet ending. Yet it was like a lot of people wanted them to ride off into the sunset afterwards, and that wasn't in the card.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, I'm sorry. Spoiler alert.
I had a similar situation, both locally with some of my friends who I really respect, were underwhelmed by the film. They're mixed. They didn't really hate it. And I really value their opinion. And they made some really good points, but, the people who are really, I really want to call out, and it's not them, are the ones that every single award season feel obligated to see every single film and they go into it like they're picking up a list. And the question I need to ask these people is, would you have seen Call Me By Your Name if it hadn't been nominated?
Right.
And I'm sensing the answer is no. And just for those people who say, oh, I saw it, it's not as great as they say, and not really giving a really full explanation, they just, you know, it's this wishy-washy, really unconvincing, you know, argument to that why they didn't like it. That sounds a little, it sounds dangerously close to gay panic. I don't want to say it's gay panic, but it just sounds really, really similar.
Well, you're right. I mean, it is kind of a, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, being gay is just a genetic mutation and a developmental problem. And you're going to get a lot of people, developmental expression of your mother and your genes. But what I think is that a lot of people that are naturally born romantics absolutely love the movie. And the people that are born, you know, born cynics are going to say, there wasn't enough sex. There wasn't enough this.
Wait, just as nasally as you said it, yes.
Well, I know. I do the Brooklyn accent, Jersey accent pretty good. But anyway, there was not a minute of the film that I just absolutely did not worship.
Let's address the camera pan. This is something that the director was asked about. And he said that at that point, that relationship, he felt that by showing too much, it would lessen the impact of the film. So he had to pull away to actually have that one moment of privacy. And I think what I say is that the intimacy that Timothée Chalamet and Armie Hammer display, that chemistry, that very, very intimate, you know, body language, for me, supersedes any graphic display of graphic sexuality that people argue that is missing from the film.
I agree.
It doesn't feel incomplete to me.
It didn't to me either. And I did not even notice that until I read another review that panned it afterwards. I didn't notice that they panned away to the candle or to the wall I thought after the peach, I was like sweating. So, spoiler alert, everyone's heard of the peach.
Yeah.
So I mean the whole movie as a whole, not breaking it down to Timothy or Armie Hammer, or I mean the father, the setting. I want to spend a month in that
villa.
In that villa and that little
no character. Notice the sound design, how every room has its own creak.
Yeah.
And it's so beautifully captured. The sound design in that film is probably the secret weapon of that film.
Really?
It's like the leaves have you know, very shading sort of sound, and the water, depending on which body of water they're going, and at the end you hear the snow fall to the ground. It's just very meticulous, and it's just, you know, again, beautifully realized.
And again, you know, they ride a lot of bicycles. They don't have a car. It's a very small town, which of course is an unnamed town somewhere in Italy. And they ride their bicycles, and you hear when they're on asphalt, and you hear it when you're on gravel, and you hear it when they're on grass. I mean, you're right. The sound was very meticulous. I just thought of that. That's amazing. It's so nice to sit down.
It's something you really noticed the second time. I saw it for a second time with my parents in Puerto Rico, and the thing is, I would say my father wasn't exactly his first choice. He's not homophobic or anything, but it's not the kind of film that he actually gravitates towards. But I took them, and he went along.
Uh-huh.
And then I wasn't sure what my mother was going to react, but she absolutely loved the film.
Good.
And
good.
My dad had to say that he did. He liked it as well. So,
good.
You know, like I said to some friends earlier, it's a matter of getting people to sit down and see it.
Right.
That's half the battle for this film.
No, I agree. I agree with you. And sit through it and not be, you know, and have an open mind. I mean, because I don't think it's a film for the masses. I really don't. I don't think this is a film that's going to make $100 million. I don't think this is a film, or maybe it has already, I don't know. But I mean, I don't think this is a film that is going to be, people are going to be waiting in line. Though when I went to the Gateway the first time, it was sold out.
Yeah,
but that's the Gateway. I mean,
we love the Gateway, by the way.
Well,
great theater.
We love the Gateway, but I'm just saying that's not, I mean, I don't know how it's, how it'll play in Peoria or whatever they said. Though one of my friends that I chat with on Facebook all the time, I have not lived in Kansas City in almost 20 years, and the venue that they showed it in Kansas City was also sold out for the first 3 or 4 days. All the showings. I don't know if they do 2 or 3 showings a day. So I don't know if this has touched a nerve in just a romantic film like, you know, Pride and Prejudice or Jane Austen's movies that were made into films. I think you have to look at it that way. I don't think you can look at it and compare this to, you know, a rip-roaring, you know, bodice-ripping.
You touched on something very that I was going to discuss. The romantic element of the film, I think is partly in part because of the screenwriter of the film, James Ivory, Merchant Ivory fame, who adapted Andre Aciman's book. And for the people who say the film is not gay enough, and I'm sorry, but Andre Aciman, the author of the book, is straight. Ivory is not straight. I think what happened and what makes the film so unique is that melding of sensibilities between the director, the Italian director Luca Guadagnino's very sensual, the way he approaches tactile mise-en-scene and Ivory's more refined, genteel. It's like a fusion of sensibilities that makes that yields something that is so beautiful and so unique.
It was, you're exactly right. I'm going to move on. Are we done? Do you have anything more to say about Call Me By Your Name?
Call us. Let us know. Call us by our names.
That's right. The number is 619-924-0998. And then you press 1 to get in the queue, and we'll put you on the air. I'm watching the board. Moving to the thing.
Before we move on, Call Me By Your Name, we think it's a lock for adapt a screenplay. Though a little voice in the back of my head say Mudbound could upset, but I believe there's too much bias against Netflix for that to happen. And of the 5 nominees in the adapted screenplay category, Call Me By Your Name is the only Best Picture nominee. So
right.
So it gives it the lion's edge.
Let me go over adapted screenplay. For those of you who don't have your official ballot in front of you, the movies up for adapted screenplay are Call Me By Your Name, The Disaster Artist, Logan, Molly's Game, and Mudbound. I have only seen the first and the last one. But again, Ruben's correct. Call Me By Your Name is the only one that's been nominated for Best Picture. Let me go over the Best Picture ones real quick. Call Me By Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, The Shape of Water, and 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. By the way, I'm a Missouri native.
This year's race brings up something that's very, very... has been very unique about the way that that the voting process happened in the last several years. It used to be that for many, many decades, like the rest of the category, there'll be 5 nominees and the voters would just pick one, and the one with the most votes would win, right? Simple enough, right? A few years ago, people started complaining that some more mainstream films, some populist films were being left out. So a vote was taken, and now for Best Picture, it's up to 10 nominees, up to 10. And for some reason, it never makes it to, all the way to 10. I think it did in the first year, and then it never did. So what I'm saying is that now people vote in ranking. You know, they rank the 9 nominees, and they put number 1, the one they like the most, in order of preference until they reach number 9. So that what that has done is that it has made the task of predicting which film would win Best Picture a little more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been reflected on the winners for the past couple of years. You know, not exactly the ones that you would think were the front runners end up surprising. Right. Like what happened with Envelope Gate last year.
Okay, yes.
Let's not talk about Envelope Gate. Oh, we can talk about Envelope Gate.
No, we don't have to. I mean, that was kind of a mistake that it could happen to anyone.
Well, it happened to Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway. And Faye Dunaway just went ahead and did it.
Right.
Didn't she?
I know. That's funny. So do you have anything that what else think will be a surprise?
Well, as I was saying, Best Picture is the big question this year. You know, so most of the other categories, you have like a two horse race, or you have one where there's like a somewhat clear cut contender with other dark horses in there. Maybe aching to, spoil everything and to surprise you. But so preferential ballot. Let's explain how it happens. This is a very complicated thing. It used to be so simple, right?
Right.
Not anymore.
Just like your electoral college.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So here's what happened. PricewaterhouseCoopers accountants sort the best picture ballots that have been selected by ranking order. Okay. They place them in stacks based on members' number one vote. This is according to an article that came out today from the LA Times by Dan Witt. They then eliminate the movie with the fewest first place votes, giving those votes to each ballot's second ranked film. Are you with me so far?
Yes.
The process continues. Smaller stacks eliminated. Votes redistributed to the next choice down until one movie has more than 50% of the vote. And that's the best picture winner.
Ah, okay. So okay. It is a little bit more complicated.
Yes.
But it seems a little more fair to me because, you know, the blockbuster film that everyone loved, like when Star Wars came out the first time 40 years ago, that of course had to win Best Picture. But you know, I really think another big fight category that can go any way is the actress in a leading role, because you've got Sally Hawkins with The Shape of Water, Frances McDormand, Three Billboards, huge talent, Three Billboards, and then Meryl Streep, the perennial winner of
it. Yeah, Meryl Streep's not winning for The Post.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
No,
and
she was very good in The Post. It's not. Well, the thing is, when someone from Meryl Streep, when you win for something like Sophie's Choice,
yeah,
you know,
that's...
and then you go and play Margaret Thatcher and you win for that, you don't win for a performance like The Post. You know, it's like you set the bar so high for yourself that
right.
It's very unlikely you'll get nominated.
Right.
But I don't think she's winning. I love The Post. It's a Steven Spielberg capturing some of that energy of the younger Spielberg, you know,
right.
and the result is almost like a love letter to Frank Capra.
Right.
It's very idealistic. A lot of people have criticized it for, you know, kind of like, digesting everything in bite-sized, you know,
right.
Particles for people who are not really experts in political affairs. But I think it really works. Yeah.
And as someone who lived through that area, I'm 67, so this was in my early life, you know, I was 20 something when all this was happening. So I followed this like a hawk. And those of you like me who followed this, who were political junkies back in the 70s, know that The Post was not the first place this was published. The Pentagon Papers were actually first published by
The New York Times.
That's not correct. It was published by the Universalist Unitarian, published it first. That's who he gave it to first. And then it was the New York Times.
Wow.
Correct. So actually, this was the third time it had been published. I only know this because it was a friend with somebody. It was a universe. And it was about almost a 3 or 4 weeks before the New York Times did. New York Times was a little bit different. They published it. But it didn't make – somehow, even though we called the New York Times our national paper of record, it wasn't until the Washington Post published it that people started believing it. It wasn't an era of fake news, but it was an era of, you know, who are you going to trust? Well, they trusted the Washington Post because they're a political paper. The New York Times is more economics, world
news.
At
the time.
Pardon?
At the time.
Yeah. Right. You know, at the – you know, 30 – you know, 40 – 40 years ago, yeah, it was more of a global look rather than the political look. And the Washington Post was the United States' political, you know, right, left, center, whatever you want to call it. So that didn't bother me a whole lot because I knew it was fiction. But again, I thought it was a very good movie. I don't think it was her best. I don't think it was Tom Hanks's best.
He's having a blast, though. He really is.
Yeah, he was having fun.
Yeah.
I think he was just having fun. You're exactly right. So I think that one can go either to Sally Hawkins or Frances McDormand. I think it's up in the air.
I think what gives the edge to Frances is that she's really been very, very, very out there campaigning for the film.
Yeah.
And Sally Hawkins has not played ball to the same extent.
You're right.
And
you're
when
right.
it comes to categories like this, the politics
best
goes a actress. Long way.
Yeah, you're best at the best.
And I would vote myself. I think Sally Hawkins should get it.
I do too.
Think that she is what makes Shape of Water work. She is the MVP there. And I think that McDormand I think she's winning. I really do.
I do too. I mean, I love Sally Hawkins in Shape of Water. I think she was, her facial expressions to this day, when I think of it, I can just see her. She has a kaleidoscope of facial expressions, whether it's love, hate, quiet, not. I mean, she's just amazing.
Yeah. It was a good year for her. She made a little film with Ethan Hawke called Maudy that was released in the summer. And that's actually a very nice film that not many people saw. And she's very good in that, too. She plays like a folk painter. It's a true story.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, her work in Shape of Water, it's really career best stuff for her. I've been following her for many, many years. I'm really uh-huh. happy that she's one of the contenders this year. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like you have to campaign.
Right. You have to get out there. Yeah. It is almost a popularity contest. I mean, it is talent, but, I mean, people, it's the last name they saw. You know, it's kind of like a... the last meal you ate, that's what you remember.
Yeah.
All right, so let me go back to one of the other best pictures that I absolutely love. Phantom Thread is another movie that I love, but again, I don't think that's for
it's
everybody.
Wonderful.
What do you think?
I love Phantom Thread. I really liked it the first time I saw it, but it wasn't until I saw it the second time that it opened up like a flower. You know,
really?
It's like, the thing is, my experience with Paul Thomas Anderson is that he tends to go, the writer-director, he tends to go a little dark
yeah.
in the films. And it appeared that Phantom Thread was heading in that direction, but that's not the end game here.
No.
And once I knew that, once I realized that it was a lot lighter than it appeared, then it all snapped together. It's like, okay, this movie is shaped like a romantic comedy.
Right.
It's the Tale of the Shrew, with the genders reversed.
You're right.
Yeah.
I didn't
and
even think then, of that.
That is, it all made sense, and it all fell into place. And I wish I could go back and change my top 10 because I had left it just out of my top 10, but now it will be my number 2 right before we had Call Me By Your Name.
I think you're right. I think I didn't even think of Tammy of the Shrew until just now. I didn't read any movies. I just walked into it and loved the music, by the way. The music,
Johnny Greenwood is the man.
The music in Phantom Thread is worth the price of admission.
Really?
To sit there for whatever, an hour and a half, 2 hours. It is a lovely movie. It's beautifully done, by the way. And anyone, just a nice, nice film. And I really was surprised because I didn't know that much about it going in. And the beginning didn't get me hooked or anything. But then as I sat through the movie, I really loved it.
Yeah, it's the most lighthearted depiction of a power struggle in the relationship you'll see. it's vibrant and it's just very buoyant. I think people should go see it. Should check it out.
It's one of those movies that when it ended, you didn't realize you had spent that much time in the theater.
Correct.
Glad we agree. Okay. Gary Oldman, The Darkest Hour. What did you think of the movie?
No. We're doing so well. Now you're going to have to worry in everything.
Well, because he's up for Best Actor.
And the movie's up for Best Picture. I don't know why. It is terrible. That movie is awful. It is S-H-I-T.
Well, if you had watched The Crown, that was a much better depiction
absolutely.
Of Winston Churchill than Gary. I didn't believe him.
You don't, because you can't get past the prosthetics that want to reach across the street and yank those prosthetic jowls off of Gary Oldman's face.
It was done by a first-year makeup student at some junior college. It was really... John Lithgow, if you saw The Crown, I'm sure everyone has heard of The Crown. and it was a Netflix series. I believe it was a 10 or 12
season. Yeah, it's now in the second season.
Right. But of course, he's not in the second season. And neither is the same actors and actresses there because they grew up. But John Lithgow did an amazing job and didn't use the prosthetic.
No.
He used his own face, but he kind of punched over and did a beautiful job. And I think they relied too much on the makeup. And you're right. You it just bothered you that this man was wearing a cheap rubber mask.
Yeah, and the thing is, does John Lithgow look like Winston Churchill? No.
No.
It doesn't matter because he's so damn good in it.
Exactly.
Yeah, he captures the spirit.
Exactly.
And by contrast, they tried to just plaster Gary Oldman's face with all this goop.
Right.
And then he, on top of that, he overcompensates by just doing it with his hands. You know,
right.
We know that Winston Churchill was like that. You know, he was like bigger than life, but he overdoes it. You know, and then in the theater, that might be okay, but in film, it's supposed to be less is more. You know,
right. Exactly.
And it's a film that they say no, it's everything is more. You know,
right.
All this overhead shots, that light and dark, and the lighting design. Everything was in your face, and they're just trying to just ram it down your throat. And this is quality cinema. Cinema of quality. Oscar bait. Give me an Oscar. And make matters worse, not only is Gary Oldman probably winning Best Actor, it's winning Best Makeup and Hair as well.
You think so?
Yes.
You think you're only going to win Best Actor?
Yeah, I am afraid. I'm afraid that it's a done deal. I mean, for the longest time, I was holding out hope that Timothée Chalamet would pull an upset.
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's not happening. And or the actor from Get Out, who's fantastic in it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's happening. I really think Gary Oldman is winning the sense among a lot of Italian voters that he's overdue.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with that, but this is the wrong performance to give it to him for.
I think so too. I didn't like it. Oh, let's get to one of my faves on the whole thing, one of the movies that I did not go into knowing anything about it. I mean, I was totally zero. I didn't see any ads. I didn't read any reviews. I didn't even read the billboard to say, you know, that said anything. We just went. And I loved, as far as a movie that hit you in the stomach, beat you on the head, woke you up, threw cold water on your face, it was Get Out. It's nominated for Best Picture. Jordan Peele is nominated for Best Director. As you said, the actors nominated for Best Actor. Ruben, what did you think?
I really like Get Out. I mean, it's a film. You know, it speaks to the resonance of the film that we're still talking about it a year after its release.
Exactly.
That cast members did remember. So long a movie that came out so long time ago. This reminds me a little bit of Silence of the Lambs.
Oh.
A movie that came out also very early in 1991 that went on to win Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Screenplay, and Best Director, you know, the big five.
Right.
So that's why my gut's telling me this might be a Silence of the Lambs year. You know, this might be a year that it may not win Best Actor, you know, it may not win Best Director, but I think for screenplay and film, you know, this might be a repeat of Spotlight a couple of years ago, a movie that just won two. Screenplay?
That's right. It's
yeah.
The best screenplay.
Yeah.
Best original screenplay.
Original screenplay. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Let me go over original screenplay because that is
a hot category.
That's a hot category.
Yeah.
And I'm my husband's a writer. I'm one of his people he reads to. So I'm into flow and dialogue. The Big Sick.
Lovely film.
I love the movie, yes. Get Out. Lady Bird, The Shape of Water, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. So all of these were really good movies. Well, I didn't like Lady Bird, but everyone else in the world did.
Yes, right. We need to talk about that eventually.
Okay, we will.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
But back to original screenplay.
Back to original screenplay. I think that all of these movies, really, any one of these could win.
Yeah.
I really do. I think because original screenplay, I think Three Billboards was brilliant, and it's getting a lot of. I don't know if you saw the article in the. It wasn't the LA Times today. It was in. I can't remember where I saw it, but somebody put up today Three Billboards in Hollywood, red billboards on the Me Too problem.
Wow.
no arrest yet, and you're just sitting there, and it was a very a slap to the Harvey Weinstein.
Right, and I remember seeing that too, and there was one in Miami regarding Marco Rubio.
Right, those are three moving billboards, and they.
Right.
They followed him to D.C., and no one knows who has paid for them, and I can tell you that I had nothing to do with it.
That's funny.
Well,
but, yeah, going back to original screenplay, I think it's a two-horse race here between Three Billboards and Get Out. I really think it's one or the other.
You really think so?
Lady Bird could just swoop in there and surprise everyone, but I don't think so. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I really think any or all of those can do that. Really quick, original song, it's going to be This Is Me, because it was the showstopper. Yes, I think it was the showstopper. I think the delivery of it was just beautiful. Don't you think?
Okay. I don't know. The problem with The Great Showman is it's not as beloved universally as Coco was.
Right.
And you know, for me, I mean, I see the sentiment behind The Great Showman. On paper, it's a Ruben Rosario kind of film all the way. But the problem is, it looks like it was put together in an iPad. It looks too synthetic to me.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. The movie, but not the song.
Yeah, the song is fine. It is a showstopper. I still think the Coco song might it's because it reflects. The heart of the film. Again, I'm saying that someone who's very mixed on Coco, and other people love the film, but the sense is that it's one of Pixar's better films in the last few years. I disagree with that, but that might carry it over for that original song. I don't know. It could be either one, but if put a gun to my head, I would have to go for Coco.
Yeah, well, yeah. I enjoyed Coco. I think so did my 8-year-old. Our grandson.
Yeah.
I mean, and I was worried about taking him because of the. By the way, it deals with the Day of the Dead and going to the underworld and coming back and.
It's in a very toothless way. Oh, at least to me.
It was perfect for an 8-year-old because they already know about the death thing, so it's not it wasn't spooky skeletons or anything like that. It was done in a very bright, colorful, musical way, and it was just a. Culturally, it was great to talk to him about something he doesn't see. He lives in Minnesota, so he doesn't see a lot of diversity. So it was fun for me to take him, and my husband speaks Spanish, so we had and lived near Mexico for a while, or in Mexico. So I did enjoy Coco, and I did enjoy Remember Me, but I still think sometimes the Oscars give a movie that isn't very good, but it had a great movie.
Les Mis is a good example.
Right, exactly. That's
won three Oscars.
It won, right, and yet
that was painful. Each one was painful, even Anne Hathaway.
Oh, you're kidding. Okay. Okay. So we're gonna get to something that Ruben and I do not agree on at all. I think the worst movie of 2017. 2018, whatever the suit.
17 in this case. Yeah.
17, yeah, sorry, it's last year. Was Lady Bird. Let me tell you why, and then Ruben can rebut. I, as many of you know, because I talk about him all the time, I have a 41-year-old son who I spent most of the time raising, and especially during his teenage rebellion years. And I saw a lot of parenting and sulking teenager I've had one in my house, and I saw one on the screen, and at the end she realizes that she appreciates her mother. So I just thought it was, a sultry teenager sulking. Oh, my parents, oh, they worked really hard. I mean, it took a long time for my son to say, thank you and you were a good parent. And I just saw that it was just a very, I found it pretty shallow. Okay, I'm done.
Okay. You have a point. I think there's more shadings to Lady Bird's journey than sulking all the time. And one of the things I found refreshing about Lady Bird is that it's not afraid to portray her character, the character in a very selfish, unflattering way, which Saoirse Ronan does so well in her performance. You're looking at it from the point of view of the parent.
Right.
Whereas I saw myself in Lady Bird's shoes because I went to a Catholic high school earlier than she did. You know, I'm older. I mean, I went in the late 80s.
Right.
And graduated in 1990, and a lot of the things of the Catholic high school trappings were captured very well, and I think I saw myself portrayed, and it was, you know, it's supposed to make you queasy and uncomfortable. It did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's as great as some of his champions say it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think the balance between the pathos and the comedy. It's a little brusque, I want to say, a little uneven. It lacked a little bit of subtlety in terms of the shadings of the tone. But it did move very fast, you know, at a clip. It had a great supporting cast, not just Laurie Metcalf, who's terrific as the mother. And I really, you know, I really hope, you know, I'm rooting for her, but it's looking like Alison Janney's winning, but also Lucas Hedges, who was so brilliant in Manchester by the Sea as playing Casey Affleck's nephew in the film. I like Lady Bird. I don't love it. I'm kind of, in terms of nominees, kind of in the middle for me.
Uh-huh.
I see where you're coming from, but there are worse sort of fish to fry out there, like Darkest Hour.
Oh yeah, Our Darkest Hour is worse than Lady Bird.
Yeah,
right. I wouldn't rank them. I did not dislike Lady Bird as much as I disliked Darkest Hour, but I just felt it was not in a Best Picture, you know, category. Okay. And it's also in original screenplay. But I actually would like to bring up a movie that I saw that I thought was really good, and that was War for the Planet of the Apes. Now, I want to rewind and tell you that I saw it in Texas at an Alamo Draft House, and I had had two beers before.
Okay, that's probably the best way to see it.
I know. And so I don't know if you're familiar with Alamo Draft House. You can't take your liquor in the movie, but you can drink up before and drink up after. And we were there when it was 2-for-1, so everyone had at least two. I may have had four.
Oh, goodness.
Because I wasn't driving. I was with friends. So, but I thought that War for Planet of the Apes, I've seen all of them, by the way. I'm a Planet of the Apes person. I'm sorry.
Don't apologize for that.
I mean, it was beautiful. The first one was 50 years ago.
Oh, it's a fantastic film.
Yeah, with Roddy McDowell. But, you know, it's not only the technical thing. It was a nice story. The story was great. I mean, they've really come a long way in developing the story and character line.
I like it better when it's called the Ten Commandments.
Oh.
I'm talking about War for the Planet of the Apes.
Right, right. That's what it was.
You know, they should just call it Caesar Moses and get it over with.
Exactly.
You know?
It was.
It's fine. I liked it. Okay. It's fine, you know.
Right. But it was I thought it was underrated, and nobody we were with liked it except me, because I'm the Planet of the Apes guy.
Yeah, it's fine, and it deserved this nomination for visual effects, you know?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Makeup and hairstyling, but they didn't put them down with.
It's America. It's just three nominees for makeup. It's Darkest Hour, Wonder, with the Julia Roberts, Weepy, Picture Story.
Yes.
And Victoria Abdul, I think, is the third nominee, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And
by the way, that had beautiful makeup and hairstyling. And you would think, what kind of hairstyling do you need for Queen Victoria? But this is the whole body of the film.
But we all know that the Academy is going to go for a Gary Oldman's prosthetic
jowl. I know, and I don't know why. It's just horrendous. So, do you think that any you're going to have any? Oh, by the way, we have to talk about the Florida project.
Oh, goodness. Really? Do we really have to?
It was a film. It was done in 2017. It has one nomination. Is that right? It was horrible. If you don't go see it. If it ever is on Netflix, if you have nothing else
turn
to do,
turn the other way, drive away, drive far away.
It was like porn, poverty porn. It was very, very one note. It was a one note. It was like Liza Minnelli. She only knows one song. One note, and she does it really loud. It seemed to go on forever, repeating the exact same story over and over again. Yes, I know they can't get out of this thing. They're stuck living in these motels. Yes, they're poor. Yes, they can't afford it. Yes, they're spending too much. Yes, I know. Yes, I know. And it's just like, it's just no depth. The characters were very one-dimensional. Willem Dafoe.
It's our nominee for this film.
That's right. He's the only nominee for a supporting role. I kind of look forward to seeing him on the screen because he had a little more passion than the rest of them, but not really. I mean, I'd be ashamed if I had been in that movie.
Let's not even talk about the scene where he kicks out the pervy perv. The pervert from the motel.
Right. I know. But
let's not go over that scene where the mom takes the kid to the diner to spite her friend, and she orders all the expensive plates and just stays there for it feels like 3 hours. I feel like I never left that diner.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Well, for those of you that don't know what Florida Project is about, it has nothing to do with Florida. Well, it does. It takes place in Kissimmee, Florida, which is kind of the tacky part of Disney World, in these, I guess they're by the week or by the day motels of people living below the poverty line, of course, usually 4 to 5 to a room, and they can't get either their credits bad or they can't get enough money to rent a regular apartment. They're actually paying more in rent to the motel, but they can't get enough money to get first, last, and security or have the credit rating to rent an apartment, let alone, you know, buy a home or get out of their circle. So they're working 50, 60 hours a week. Their children wander around
aimlessly,
horribly paved parking lots the entire time. I don't know how. And they're dirty. I mean, it's just yes, I know they're there. I'm aware that there are people living like that, but they didn't give us any depth. It was
I say to Florida Project what I say when I first saw it is that we have a chronicler of Florida Live that's done it long before Sean Baker the director started making movies.
Right.
His name is Victor Nunez, and he's been following people in the working class people of Florida for decades. You know,
right.
He made movie Ulysses Gold with Peter Fonda,
right.
Ruby in Paradise with Ashley Judd.
Right.
You know, all these people who are not rich people. But they're complex people, and there's a humanity there. There are layers that are so missing from the Florida Project. It's insulting the way Sean Baker just came here, did the research for a year, and said, okay, this is it. This is I'm gonna make a grand statement about the way things are in the shadow of the Big Mouth, you know. And it's for me. I just felt it was insulting. It was insulting to Florida.
The thing is that this is going on in every city in the United States to an extent. I guess the only difference is it was in the shadow of Disney World, which is a polished, clean, all-American place where nobody is poor and everyone has enough to eat. But still, that
you will not have enough to eat after you've done a vacation there, as expensive as it is nowadays.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. I mean, when Disney went to 3 figures for a one-day pass, I thought it would. Ran into someone who works for them, and the number of people has not dropped, but the amount of money they spend in the park has dropped dramatically.
Yeah, because they can't afford anything else, so expensive to get in the first place.
Right. I think that little bit extra that they charged to get in has stopped people from doing anything other than going through the park and leaving. They're not eating. They're not buying any of the expensive gifts, not buying any cheap gifts. So really it did not do what it was supposed to do. I don't know
I think we're falling in the black hole of Disney when we should that Florida Project enable us to. We should get out while we still can.
Right. Well, let's see. What else are we going to talk about?
Well, we need to talk about the movie of the hour, which is three. That it comes down, and a lot of people are saying the best picture race comes out of two movies, which are Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri and The Shape of Water. And we really haven't talked much about those two.
No, that's right. So now we're on those. That'll wrap us up here. Shape of Water, I loved. It was melodramatic. It was love. It was hate. It was ugly. It was beautiful. It had all these dichotomies, you know, good, evil, things like that. and it just gripped me. And I really feel like that's going to be the best movie. Three Billboards is a great story, beautifully portrayed. It's very dramatic. Everybody was up to par. Woody Harrelson is great in this movie. I don't understand.
Terrific.
I don't understand why he wasn't nominated.
No, he is.
He is.
He is. And this is actually making the supporting actor race a little interesting.
Oh, that's right. He is.
I still think co-star, Sam Rockwell was winning, but it might throw a wrench if the votes split and give our friend Willem Dafoe the Oscar. Let's hope that's not what happens on Sunday.
I hope not. We'll see. But really, I really felt like they're both great movies, but I think at the end, the Shape of Water just had more layers into it. It had science fiction, it had romance, it had, you know, beautiful special effects. The effects are great, especially the ending. The special effects at the ending were, to me, just amazing.
It's like a fairy tale for grown-ups.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a grown-up, and I was a good, and it was great. Three Billboards is a good movie. It had a great, great cast and an amazing story, and they pulled it off. So I think it could go either way, but I really like The Shape of Water better.
I like both. Of those two, I give The Slightest Shape of Water. In both cases, I feel that this is a work of filmmakers who have done better work in the past and are being recognized now.
I agree.
For works where they actually revisit some of the themes and aesthetics that they've explored in their earlier work. To me, not as successfully, but I'm glad that they're being recognized. You know, I'm a big fan of In Bruges, which was Martin McDonagh's direct debut, the prior director of Three Billboards. Here, I felt that he was trying to make a grand statement of U.S. culture and the demons in that kind of like haunt us in terms of violence and racism.
Uh-huh.
And I think the film is a lot more effective as a revenge tale of this portrait of this woman
mm-hmm.
who has her own demons to fight. You know, it's not just a message film, you know, which could have been that, and you know, in some parts it is, but I think it's more effective as that as a portrait of race, of racial tensions, where I think the film is well intentioned, but it doesn't particularly ring true because I think it is very much a foreigner's version of America that for me didn't always ring true.
Well, and also the whole movie really came together very well. I mean, I don't have any complaints about it. I just think that, you know, it is an American movie. I mean, it is truly an American movie. I'm just saying it was strictly our collective pathos is right now, and especially right now. I think it had more to do. I think 10 years ago, I don't think this movie would have been this much a hit. What do you think?
Probably. It would have been a different film, I think, you know? And it just happens the timing is really favorable to this film because, you know,
right.
Some of the subjects it touches are something that is very much our daily chatter, you know?
Right.
And to say something positive about it, something I really like, it has one of the best sequences of a film I saw in 2017. It's basically the letter that the Woody Harrelson character writes. The way that sequence is cut, it basically goes back and forth, it shifts back and forth in time, the way the stream of consciousness thought would when you're writing a letter. So I thought that was very well edited, very well put together. You know, that's probably my favorite scene in the entire film.
Oh, you know what? I just thought of that. I love that part, but I didn't dissect it like you did. I just grabbed it as a whole. But you're right. That was a lot of editing.
Yeah.
Backwards,
really well done.
You know, going from the present to the past, and then going back again.
Correct.
I mean, it kept going to about three different
mm-hmm.
time frames,
right.
One letter. Yeah. Okay.
In terms of Shape of Water, I didn't used to be a Guillermo del Toro fan for his early work. I felt it lacked kindness.
Yeah.
It was a genre enthusiast, you know, showing his chops more effectively in some movies than others, but I think after Pan's Labyrinth, he became a different filmmaker, you know, I think a more humane filmmaker. I think the films reflect that. Shape of Water is a summation of the things that you like about the Del Toro, but it felt like it felt a little recycled in terms of the of the of the of the way it's directed, in terms of the visuals. It's fine. I mean, it works. The film works. I just felt that the narrative it lags in the second hour. It kind of peters out when it should be tightening the screws.
Okay.
The first hour is very enchanting. I mean, I love the cast. It's the look of it, the production design,
beautiful.
The cinematography, the Alexandre Desplat, the wonderful score that uses the theremin at some point.
Correct.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
I felt it was a special. 2017 was a very special year for films.
Yeah.
And these two films are good. But to me, they're not representative of the very best of the year. You know, okay. If they end up, one of them end up winning, it's not beyond the world. But I would prefer an upset on Sunday night.
Like Get Out. And we talked about this earlier. We're not being reverse racist or racist at all. But do you think that there's anything to do with last year Moonlight winning, and this year another African American movie winning? Hollywood is pretty lily white.
It is, but I think the fact that Get Out and Moonlight that received multiple Oscar nominations speaks
right.
to the changing demographic in the Academy.
There, it's true.
This is the minority vote manifesting itself, and it's I think it's something that's very thrilling. We
okay.
see it now with the huge success of Black Panther.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I'm not a Marvel fan, but I have to give it up for the cultural moment. You know, it's
right.
For me that's more important than anything in Black Panther, the film Black Panther.
Right.
So it goes back to where we are as a culture now, you know. And I think, you know, Three Billboards and Get Out show two different facets the scenes are not too dissimilar. I would prefer Get Out to win. My head is saying Three Billboards, but my gut is screaming at the top of his lungs, Get Out is winning. Get Out is winning. Who do I believe? I don't know.
That's
don't
right.
ask me that. I don't know. I could change my mind tomorrow. I don't know.
Okay, that's true. Everyone has an opinion. We'll know on Sunday. Anything else you want to talk about? We're about to wrap up here.
Sure. Let's give it up for the documentary Faces Places. It's a nominee for the documentary feature. Agnes Varda, member of the one of the last living members of the French New Wave, and the street photographer JR, who's much younger. They go on this field trip to the French countryside. And they do beautiful things with large photography and put it in the streets and what have you. And the way it very playfully deconstructs what they're doing, it's just wonderful. I'm rooting for them for that category, and I'm hoping that the Academy was as enchanted by the film as I was. I also want to give a shout out to Roger Deakins, the cinematographer of Blade Runner 2049.
Mm-hmm.
He's been nominated, I believe, 13 times, has
oh.
never won.
Oh my God.
He is the Susan Lucci of cinematographers in working Hollywood today. It's going to be a horse race between him and Dunkirk for
cinematography. Mm-hmm.
I'm rooting for that Deakins pulls it off. It's a long time coming, and Blade Runner 2049 has just stunning cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
Dunkirk is accomplished as well, but
right.
I like Dunkirk. I like Blade Runner 2049 better
okay,
in
good.
That regard.
Good. By the way, if you haven't seen Black Panther, it is a great movie. It's loud.
It's okay.
fun. I thought it was fun.
It's okay.
It was fun. I wasn't intimidated at all.
No. It's just it becomes another Marvel film. That's for me the disappointing part. You know?
Exactly. But there's a genre for that. There's an audience for that. There's a market for that.
Yeah.
And we're a consumerist society.
Yeah. It's not as special as it should have been. Let's put it that way.
Right.
It's at its best when it tries to be a mixture of sci-fi and African folktale.
Right. That's what I thought was fun.
But
that's
then
what I thought was fun.
The stuff then becomes about the whole clashes at the end, and it just becomes so stale.
Okay.
You know, I love the characters. They're very rich, but they're weighed down by the typical Marvel shit.
Well, okay, but Marvel, as I said, Marvel is doing really well now.
They are, you
they're
know.
Doing, they're, I mean,
the
Netflix,
formula works.
Netflix has what, five or six series
something
going
like
on
that.
Right now, and there's a new Marvel film coming out every single year.
More than one.
There's
three.
The Guardians of the Galaxy and
last year it was three.
Oh my
Guardians
God.
Two, Spider-Man Homecoming Thor Ragnarok, which was fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. I enjoyed it.
I missed a few of those because I didn't have the kids here. I only go when there's I've got the kids here. All right, so Oscars are this Sunday. There's a little bit of controversy going on with the E! Special. Have you heard of this?
Yes.
Ryan Seacrest
is facing some sexual harassment allegations. He is expected to go on the red carpet, and he's still going through with it. Will the big A-listers stop and talk to him?
Well, what I've read and what I've heard, and I got on Variety today, which I can't believe I did online, and some of the publicists are going to steer away from him.
Wow.
And they're going to go because there's plenty of other acreage there. I mean, E does one. Is it ABC? Is it going to be ABC or NBC?
I believe it's ABC.
ABC.
Yeah.
ABC's going to have a red carpet show. I think there are four red carpet shows going on at the same time. And then, of course, the fifth one is online. I can't remember if Oscars are doing it or one of the other networks is doing one online. So there's three or four other places that you can steer the A-listers to, so you won't have to be, and I think that Juliana lady is going to be with Ryan. I think that's the
Huff?
No. The one from The Housewives.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, what's her
name? I don't know.
I forgot her name. It's like Juliana something.
Okay.
Yeah, and she's very skinny. She's very popular. Mm-hmm. I think she might, push him out of the way if she sees somebody coming. But a lot of publicists are going to avoid Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I think it speaks to the hashtag MeToo movement, which we haven't talked about much this year.
Right.
But I think it's basically casting a shadow over this year's awards race.
Right. It did over the Golden Globe.
Big time.
Yeah, big time. I don't know. It seems to have looked like, oops. It seems to have, it's okay.
Yeah.
It seems to have diminished a little bit, but there's still new things coming out every week. There seems to be another fish in the barrel every single week. Another man accused of ridiculously horrendous things. And the Ryan Seacrest stuff sounds just as bad as any of the others. And I kind of, okay, honestly, did you ever get the gaydar from him?
Yes. I've heard that some of those rumors, they're out there. But we really, it's like, it's all hearsay.
Right, exactly.
But it appears that he is not 100% gay,
Or he's putting on a really good act.
No, yeah, exactly.
And that could be why he's acting out. I mean, that could, honestly, that could be his acting out. Maybe I can't be gay because I'm, pushing my face into people.
I don't know. There's a kind of publicity anyone would want to.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, maybe not.
Anyway, I still have time. I want to give a shout out to my buddies at Cine Sports Talk for being so good to me and for letting me be on their podcast. And for the people at Web Center, WSBN, Sean and Sana, thank you for listening. Now go back to work. And thank you all my friends for supporting me all these years.
Thank you, Ruben. This is the end of our fourth annual Oscar night. Thank you all. Good night.
Good night.
Yay. Yay. It ended.